Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:48 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 13th. And today there were two, I think, primary events. One is that the primary Wall Street indices are hovering at historic highs. The S&P 500 is on the future. It's 6 points away from that big psychological 2,500 point level. The NASDAQ is a couple of points below 6,000 on the cash and 2 points above it on the future. Then when we look at markets generally, it was a quiet day. Primarily in Europe, there was a positive reaction, but it was the IBEX was the leading performer in Europe in here today. And I think that's interesting that it is some of the peripheral markets that are starting to exhibit relative strength here. And that is, I think, quite interesting also because they were largely written off. And when we look around the world for base formations, and I think a lot of people are reluctant to even consider that peripheral Europe might be a base formation in development. But when we look at it on that 10-year chart, it looks exactly like a base formation. And then, of course, there is this incredible volatility that is characteristic of base formations, and you often get peaked trough swings, or perhaps better said, trough to peak swings of about 100%, which is exactly what you have in Spain, 6,000 to 12,000. When we look at that on a much longer term basis, then we can see that the market was as high as 16,000, at least well, almost a decade ago now. And it hasn't really been in what we could consider a well-defined bull market for a really quite some time. So there is the potential that we could see it breaking above the 12,000 level at some point in the future. And the most likely scenario is now that it is finding support in the region of the trend mean that we get probably back up towards that level. But what it also helps to, I think, to really reiterate is that when we look at some of these European markets, that they have responded in much the same way that the US did to quantitative easing. The ECB has increased its balance sheet by over 2.5 trillion euro. It's more than doubled it in the last 3 years. And yes, they're starting to talk about tapering, but they haven't said anything about how long the tapering process will be. And the Fed is beginning to toy with the idea of reducing the size of its balance sheet, but at $4.5 trillion, then they're really not talking about bringing it back to pre-crisis levels. They may only take a couple of $100 billion out of circulation. So that would suggest that we are going to be in this period of a great deal of liquidity sloshing around for a considerable period, and that they're going to have to be incredibly cautious about removing it. And I think that that is very important to remember. And when we start to aggregate what is the total amount of liquidity outstanding, when you start to look at balance sheets for various central banks and then redenominate them back into US dollars, we are closing in on $20 trillion in central bank balance sheets. And if we can define this bull market as liquidity fueled, then this chart says that there is ample fuel and that liquidity is both global and mobile. So it will go to the markets that represent the greatest potential for potential upside, either in terms of yield, capital appreciation, or currency market appreciation. And Europe is in there with a fighting chance because it is coming off of such low levels, and it is a region that is quite heavily leveraged to the growth of the global economy, and we are in a period of synchronized global economic expansion. That was something that is also, I think, being appreciated increasingly by the oil market. West Texas Intermediate was up by a dollar and change in here today. It has almost completely countermanded the downward dynamic that we saw on Friday, and it is closing in once more on that $50 area. If it can surmount the $50 area, then we can begin to talk about it having broken the progression of lower rally highs evidence since the beginning of this year. And that would also rhyme with the I think the condition that we have, that generally speaking, commodities, and most in particularly industrial commodities, and certainly oil is one of those, should do better in an environment where we have synchronized global economic expansion because people just need more of them. And against a background where we have this where we have this environment where the where OPEC has been cutting supply, then what that suggests is that while that has perhaps been not nearly enough to create a knee-jerk response in terms of prices rallying, what it has done is helped to unwind some of the oversupply. It doesn't mean that we're going to be moving back into a secular bull market for oil prices, but perhaps we could have prices moving higher from here. Certainly, the price action is looking a bit more encouraging at this stage, and it is also worth looking at Brent crude. And Brent has broken its progression of lower rally highs. It has a clearly more bullish aspect to it, and of course the difference between the two is really quite clear because the US is benefiting from unconventional supply, and there is plenty of it. It is only a question of at what price is it economic, and the higher prices move, the more of it that they will create, and that could contribute to the arbitrage between the two, between Brent and West Texas Intermediate staying wide for a bit longer. When we look at the gold price, then it is still around or pulling back from this $1,350 area, and it is a question whether it is going to hold that level around $1,300. What we can look at this long term or this weekly chart, and we can see clearly that it was a bit overbought in the short term, that it was an emphatic breakout that got almost up to test the 2016 peak, and it was due some consolidation, and it is getting some consolidation. But the real proof that we are back in a demand-dominated environment beyond this short-term rally will be where it finds support. And if it can find support somewhere between $1,300 and the region of the trend mean, which was currently around 1,260, then that would help to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And silver prices, which had I think an even more impressive rally, going from 15 and change up to $18, are equally susceptible to an additional pullback. But the region of the trend mean is a little bit closer when we think about where silver is, and it is still with the $17 handle. So, but that doesn't mean that it can't pull back by 60 or 70 cents and still have a broadly bullish environment. So, that would suggest that the saw or the adage that we have coined for the commodities for much of the last decade, which is don't pay up for commodities, is as true today as it has been for any time within the last decade. They are best bought following reactions, and we are in one of those reactions. And when we look around the world, there are an increasing number of markets that are breaking up out of long-term ranges, and I think there are two broad categories. There are those that have been doing nothing for an awfully long time, like Taiwan, which has broken up and out of a very long-term range for the first time since 1990. Then you have those like India, which had been ranging for a couple of years and have broken out and are pausing now, and I think well, have been pausing around 10,000, but the Nifty is looking increasingly bullish around this area. Then you have markets like Thailand, which have been largely off the radar for the last few years, but it is now at a new all-time high, and that is looking really rather encouraging. And the fact that we're getting emerging markets, developed markets, and commodity markets all breaking up out of reasonably longer term ranges, that these are markets that have done nothing at all for 4 or 5 years, and some of them considerably longer than that, then that is also symptomatic of this synchronized global economic expansion. It also suggests that it is about time that central banks should begin to think about tightening monetary policy. And but this is, of course, an environment which is plagued by uncertainty, because we've never been in this kind of situation before, where there has been just quite so much money printed in terms of what central banks have been doing, and they have a quandary as to what exactly they're going to do to remove it. And that means they're going to be cautious. And we are now at a point where inflation could begin to pick up. We're already seeing it in the UK, and that is not least because of the decline of the pound in response to the threat to the economy from Brexit. But it is only a question of when we start to see wage demand growth starting to come through in the US. We are already at a point where the number of job openings almost equals the number of unemployed people were looking for work, and that's a very tight ratio. And it suggests that the companies are going to have to begin to start offering better compensation if they want to either draw more people into the workforce or to capture people from other jobs. So that would suggest that the bond market isn't, and it certainly doesn't look like it is ready to price in that potential just yet. The 10-year treasury was up, the yield was up a bit in here today, but it has been trending lower for pretty much all of this year. It has bounced from that psychological 2% level, and it is now testing the region of the trend mean. But if we zoom in and just look at it over the last year, we can see very clearly that there's been a downward bias, and this now has rallied enough that it has broken the progression of lower rally highs since the peak in July. But it's going to have to sustain a move above 2.4% to break the downward bias for the year. So it's got some work to do. But considering that we are at all-time highs for Wall Street, and I think that certainly from what I've been seeing, people are incredibly cautious at that. But when we're presented with these uptrends, and we have to ask ourselves just simple filter questions, and is there evidence of trend-ending characteristics? And if the answer is in the negative, then you have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. We know what trend endings will look like. We can even script what a trend ending might look like, because it could accelerate from here. If it were to accelerate in a meaningful fashion, away from the trend mean, well, then that would set us up for a much larger medium-term correction. Or we could move into a more volatile ranging phase, which, and I think we had an example of what that could look like between 2014 and 2016. That's when we had we had some evidence, at least, of a loss of momentum, and where there really was the potential that it could break down, but it didn't, and then it has reasserted on the upside in no uncertain terms. So that would have represented a top formation as well. And of course, we could have had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and we had one of those in 2015, but it was not sustained. So we know what top formation development could look like, and in the absence of it, we give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. So, with that, I think I'll leave you for today, and wish all the best to all of you.